Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today's runner is normally on the other side of the mic telling inspiring stories of the everyday runner, so I was very fortunate to turn the tables and ask him some questions today. We dive into how he went from hating running to running his first marathon, then training for Boston and not having the race experience he hoped for, and 8 Ironmans and a business later, and he's still out here proving to himself and his community that he can do hard things. So stoked about this one. So without further ado, please welcome Jason from Run Try Mag. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm really excited to talk to you. I know we've connected a little bit on social media, but I'm really excited to kind of break down your journey today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm thrilled at the idea that your tag name and your podcast is My First Marathon. I just think that's super cool. People getting into endurance sports always makes me smile.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll get into it as well, but you are the mastermind or one of the masterminds behind Run Try Mag. So excited to kind of hear about your journey and then how we landed in on that side of the business. But yeah, let's start from the beginning. How did you get introduced to movement, running? How did this all start for you?
If we go all the way back, because I'm 51 years old, if we go all the way back, I played all of the traditional sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, baseball being my favorite. And then it stopped for a while, go through college, young adulthood. And then I was married at the time to a woman who worked for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And she came home and she said, "We have to train for this half marathon." And I said, "Who's this we? Do you have a mouse in your pocket?"
Yeah.
I had zero interest in running, like none whatsoever. But she roped me into it, and I remember going, I lived in New York at the time. I remember going to the track that was right near the house and thinking to myself, I'm an athlete. I could do this, right? I did all those sports. And I remember running that first 400 meters around the track and thinking, this has got to be the worst idea I've ever had.
Right.
You know, none of the clothing or apparel or shoes that, you know, I have today, that's commonplace, and just all of it just felt awful. So I ran 400 meters. I walked 400 meters and repeated that. And I finished a mile and I walked home thinking I'm on top of the world. Like, I can't believe I just did a mile. And then I joined up with the running club that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society had and started running with people who were more veteran at these sports. And it just took a hold of me. And that was back in 2007, I want to say. And it has been a part of my life ever since.
Yeah, that's great. So I always joke that like running either forces its way into your life or you stumble upon it somehow. But either way, something about it keeps us coming back. So when did racing kind of come into play for you? Was like, how did we get from sort of dipping our toes into the running space to, okay, I'm going to try to compete?
Yeah, well, the Leukemia Lymphoma Society run was to participate in the Westchester Half Marathon. So it was immediately. It wasn't just throw on a pair of running shoes and go for a run and see if you enjoy it. It was literally, first step was to begin the process of training for a half marathon.
Okay, cool. And at the time, I know you had this group. Was this group kind of the, like, your training resource, so to speak? Or were you looking at any plans at the time? How did that all come about?
Yeah, so, I mean, back in 2007, maybe Facebook was a thing, but I wasn't on it. So I had no idea what any of that stuff was. And so the group of people that I had met through this training group were my resources. They were the people that were telling me about running. I didn't go and Google anything. I didn't find any other online publications. I didn't subscribe to any magazines. It was literally this group of people. They had a couple of leaders that had experience at running half and full marathons. And I just paid attention to them. You know, it's probably a lot like today where people come to me for advice because I've been doing it for so long. I went to those leaders for advice, and I will never forget one of the pieces of advice that one of the leaders gave me. We were running uphill, and he was like, you're bent over too much. You need to be more upright so your lungs can get oxygen and you can pump your knees. And I haven't forgot that. And so when I run today and I do hill repeats, like that's still on my mind 17 right. years later. Right. But yeah, that was, you know, I guess that would have been my social media community back then in real life, you know, touching grass and running with each other.
That's cool though. I love that start. Sometimes I think the social media world of plans and trying to piece it all together can be like information overload, and you can find 10 different opinions on one topic. And that's really tough for a beginner runner for sure.
I think you're minimizing the number. If somebody was to post to social media, right, and they asked the question, what's the best running shoe for a beginner? They're going to get hundreds of responses.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it'll be ultimately confusing in the long run.
Definitely. I'm just curious, like, what do you remember about the actual training? Like, was it, did they have you running a certain amount of times a week? Did they incorporate like speed work into your life? Like, what was introduced to you from this group?
Yeah, it was a combination of all of that stuff. Like the group that when we would meet on the weekend would be a longer run. And then during the Monday through Friday components, right? It wasn't necessarily a structured plan. It was, hey, you know, make sure you're doing some shorter runs during the week. Make sure you do some speed work. It was more general than specific when it comes to the training plan. But I do remember the getting together on the weekend to go run in a state park, Harriman State Park in New York, and running around the area over there, you know, on the roads. We didn't hit the trails. I didn't know trail running was a thing, honestly, until much later in my journey through endurance sports. But we would run and we would do hill repeats and we would do, you know, just mileage, you know, hour and a half at max, because we were training for a half marathon at the time. Mm-hmm. And just then afterwards is the gathering of people that a lot of people who are in run clubs, or even for me, triathlon clubs, you gather around afterwards, right? You do your hard workout, you have conversations, you're sharing stories, and you're going down that path. And that camaraderie is the thing that I remember the most, not necessarily the specificity of any plan or the general purpose of the plan, but just the community aspect of it all.
Sure, sure. And if you were running this half marathon with this group as well, is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Cool. So that's great. So you had a kind of a little bit of a group on race day. I'm sure that helped quite a bit. What was the first experience like? That was your first big like distance that you were hitting.
Yeah, the experience was awful. No lie. Okay. I was in so much pain, right?
Yeah.
So again, you're gathering with a group of people, nothing structured. And I get to the start line, I have no idea what's a good time, what's a slow time, what's a fast time, how to pace myself. Like I have zero clue about any of that. And I kept relying on this idea that I'm an athlete, played sports all throughout high school. I just did this training with this group of people and I should be good to go. And I will preface this by saying my motto in races has been, and for the foreseeable future will always be, all gas, no brakes. When I get to the starting line, like I'm just going to go and see how far it can take me. And I think at this race, the as far as it could take me was about 7 miles. And then coming back, because it was an out and back, coming back just felt like an eternity. You know, had no idea about nutrition, right? Or hydration. None of that was a thing for me back then. And it was awful. But when I finished, I remember the sense of accomplishment. I've just done something, you know, I just ran 13 miles and that was pretty cool. And then that bug, is what grabbed me and kept me wanting to do more.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people can relate to that of like that first experience that it's so awful that it's almost like an itch you have to scratch. It's like, I know I can do this better. So we got to do this again. So where did we go from there? Obviously you knew that this was something that you wanted to try, take another stab at. What were you thinking from there?
Yeah, then I started having more conversations with people and how do I get faster? How do I get stronger? How do I get better? And I don't recall the exact time for my first half marathon. I want to say it's like 2:11, 2:13, somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah.
And then I went and raced in Miami and I raced in Philadelphia and I broke 2 hours and like that unbelievable feeling of accomplishment, like, holy cow, I went from, you know, 400 meters of feeling like this is the worst experience ever to cramping unbelievably hard at my first half marathon to shaving 13, 14, 15 minutes from my first half marathon. And that just grabbed me. I'm a competitive person. And so the idea of just improving like that and wanting to beat myself. And here we are 17, 18 years later with, you know, a whole host of different accomplishments all along the way. But yeah, it just was one of those things like, I can be better at this. I can do better at this. And let me go figure out how to get better and to do better at this.
Definitely. Yeah. And what the half marathon distance was what you were sticking to at that point, right?
Correct.
When did you feel like you probably are still not to this point yet? I feel like there's always going to be that like moving target with racing. But when did you feel like you like were happy with your half marathon? Like you had it down to a routine. Do you knew what was good for you? Like when did the pieces kind of click together?
It was after a couple of years. And I don't want to say boredom, but it was this idea of how do I challenge myself in a different way?
Yeah. Right.
Like if I'm consistently training for the same distance for a half marathon in this particular case, after a bit, I'm going to get a little bit bored. I'm going to look for something else to do. And that's kind of how the first marathon came into play. I was like, okay, I'm a little bit bored of doing the half marathon thing. I've reduced my time. Like I said, I think it was like about 15, 16 minutes. What else can I do? How else can I challenge myself? Where is the next baseline going to be? And that's when the marathon started to come into play. And I had moved to Texas by now in this story, and started meeting people who were running, and they were talking about running marathons, no longer talking about half marathons. And I was like, I think this is something that I can accomplish. And you know, the mindset is, well, it's only two half marathons, you know?
Yeah,
easy. You don't really equate the actual amount of time into it. You just go, it's only two half marathons. I'm already doing this. So let's go do more.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So then you kind of had another community. That seems like that's something consistent for you, is you've always got a community of runners around you. So I guess same question, like what were you seeking out at this point when you were thinking about putting together a plan for your marathon training?
Yeah, that at the time, the goal, so I had learned a little bit more about what people consider a good time at the marathon distance. And I was like, I'd like to run a 4-hour marathon. I think that would be a cool thing to shoot for. I had already broken 2 hours at the half marathon distance. I think at that time, my fastest was like 152, 53, somewhere in that vicinity. So I was thinking, there's some leeway in there to get in under 4 hours. I think that'd be a good goal. And I put forth the work to go after that goal. Where I lived, I was very fortunate. There were some super flat sections. I'm not a track runner. I'm not a person who goes to the track to do track workouts, but I like doing speed interval workouts as part of my training. And the community I lived in had a very flat section that was about 800 meters. So I was able to, you know, run a half mile repeats there without going to a track. And it was also very hilly, so I could do hill repeats and do my long runs in this community. And so I had an insulated area that I could run in and get me comfortable and ready to go to compete at the marathon distance.
Very cool. Yeah. So you had everything, I guess, laid out for yourself. And then there's always that point, I feel like, in your first marathon experience where you kind of turn the corner, where you kind of prove to yourself, like, okay, the marathon distance is actually something that I can do. Maybe you internally know that ahead of time, but like, there's that run. Did you have that run where you felt like you kind of got over the hump and built a little bit more confidence for the marathon distance?
Yeah. So when you get, for me, it was, you know, getting that first 20 mile run in, right? Like, talk to people who aren't runners. Oh, I wouldn't even drive 20 miles, right? There's always that component to the conversation when you talk to people who aren't runners, and you think to yourself, man, that 20 miles is far. And if you look on a map and you plot it out, 20 miles is far. It absolutely is. But getting through that first 20 mile run, which I believe was down at White Rock Lake in Dallas, Texas. And the lake itself is 9 miles. So being able to run the lake twice and then a little bit extra was such a massive accomplishment in my head. Like, yeah, you know, another 10K after this, not a problem. I can do it.
Yeah. And when were you starting to kind of look at, or I guess, had you already picked your race at this point when you were training? Yeah. You already had that one on the calendar. Okay. Yeah. Is it a similar style to what you were training for, like loop style, or was it more of an out and back, or what was it like?
So one of the things that people laugh at me about is I just press register without looking at anything.
Like, I love that though. Like, just send it.
Yeah. The race course isn't going to change if I study it, right?
Like, Yeah. That's totally fair.
The race directors decided this is what the race is going to be. And so this is going to be. So I didn't pay attention to it at the time. I had no idea. My first marathon was the San Antonio Rock and Roll, and I had no idea if it was hilly. I had no idea if it was a circle. I had no idea if it was an out and back. I just knew I had to cover 26.2 miles. That was my mindset. That was what I had to do. And so my training, I figured do hill repeats and, you know, speed work and even doing the loop around White Rock Lake. I'd be ready for just about anything when the time came.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you were just kind of training to get to 26. And when you were, like you said in the beginning, that fuel was out the window for your first half marathon. When did you start to kind of put together like your strategy for fuel?
Yeah. So I learned from, I raced a half marathon in Miami, which is extremely humid. And I've raced in Philadelphia, which is extremely cold. And so I learned, okay, you need the fuel and you need to pay attention to this stuff. And so when I was going through my training for that first marathon, I was practicing all of it. At the time, Goo was predominantly, and honestly, I might say the only nutrition product on the market at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting Goo gel packets and using that to fuel plus water. Even noon, to my recollection, wasn't even a thing when I was getting my first marathon under my belt. So it was literally water and goos and gels to get through that first marathon. But practicing it during those long runs absolutely was part of the plan.
Definitely. Yeah. And what about speed work too? I hear that a lot with first marathons that like practicing taking in fuel at a marathon pace is a lot different than taking in fuel on like a slower run. So were you thinking about those things for your first marathon or did that kind of come later?
That came later. The fuel was literally just taking it in during the longer runs. My mindset has definitely changed since my first marathon, where now even if I'm going for a 30-minute run, I'm taking water with me. Like, I've been dehydrated. It's not fun, and I'm not going to risk it anymore. But back then during speed work, you know, the mindset was, yeah, it's 30, 45 minutes. I don't really need much as long as I drank water before and I have some water with me during the workout. I'll be fine, and then I can just refuel afterwards.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. Cool. And then taper leading up. Did you do a 2-week taper, 3-week taper? What did that look like?
It was a 2-week taper. And it's funny because I know people go through, you know, taper crazies. And you mentioned Run Try Mag, which is the company I founded. We have an article, the most popular article we have on our website, which was written 4+ years ago. And it's still the most popular, is titled Taper Crazies. And I understand people go through that. For me, I loved it. It was an opportunity to not get up at, you know, dawn to run before the sun rises and have to go to work. It was an opportunity to sleep in. It was an opportunity to relax, get my body ready for the big day. And so I went through a 2-week taper where intensity was still there, but the volume was way down. And I just felt like I could, like my body was getting stronger, and I certainly was getting stronger mentally during that 2-week taper for sure.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool. Well, obviously we'll break down kind of getting to race day and race day as well. But before we do that, like for your first marathon experience, reflecting on the whole the training process, what do you feel like you learned about yourself as a runner? Like what kind of came up mentally for you as you were training?
I can do hard things. One of the things I love about endurance sports is what we can take from training and racing to other aspects of our life, right? At one point, running 400 meters seemed hard. And now here I am training for a marathon. At one point, doing mile repeats or doing 400 meter repeats or doing 6 hill repeats, then 8 hill repeats, then 10 hill repeats, all of that, everything that you start out with always seems hard until you do it. And then once you do it, you start to grow stronger mentally, that when you now go into other aspects of your life, relationships, friendships, employment, things start to take a different, you get a different perspective on those things. You know, like I can do hard things. Yeah, I can handle this stuff. Look, I just you know, ran 20 miles. You know, I'm going to run 26 miles. I didn't think that was possible. If I can do that, I can do this.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's what's so special about your first marathon is it's so many milestones that you get to hit. You get to prove to yourself that you can do hard things over and over and over again, weekend after weekend. So it really is special. I know I wish that I could go back and run my first marathon again for just those moments. Cause yeah, it's so cool to finally break out of like a mindset that you're stuck in or a routine that you're stuck in and like do something for yourself. Definitely very, very impactful. All right, let's talk about race day. So we got through taper. You said that had you feeling pretty refreshed. So after taper, were there any like race logistics you had leading up? Did you have to travel to go? What did all that look like?
I lived in Dallas at the time, so we had to go to San Antonio. So a few hour drive, get a hotel, all of that stuff prior to race day. And again, I'm not one who looks at the athlete guide. I'm terrible at that. I know there are some people who are religious about it. I'm terrible about it. But I just know, got to be at the starting line corral at X time and get me there and we'll take care of it from there and get started ready to race. And, you know, I felt really strong going into race day. I felt like I had it all figured out. You know, I've got my nutrition. I know I'm going to grab water at every aid station along the way, and we're going to give it a go. And I think at the time the plan was to take in two gels every hour. So to finish in 4 hours, which is what, you know, somewhere around 9 minutes a mile, give or take. I just thought, okay, so every 6 miles, I should have consumed two gels. And so I would have 8 gels on me and drink, you know, the liquid off of the course, no handheld, no water bottles, no running vest. I would just drink off the course and I should be okay. That was the idea. That was the plan, going into that first marathon, and thinking back on that and where, and what I do today, man, I was way wrong.
It's all trial and error, I think, for the first one. So that, yeah, that makes sense. So I had a plan going in. I honestly interview a lot of people on the show and most people don't even have a fuel plan going into their first marathon. So you're ahead of them. But cool. So we got to the start line, obviously. And were you running with anyone for this race, or were you solo on this one?
This was a solo endeavor. I knew of people that would be there, but you know, we were running different paces and so we didn't actually start together. It was, you know, every man for himself, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was in the corral by myself, you know, bib on, ready to roll.
Cool. How were you feeling at the start line? Nervous, excited? What was going through your head?
Yeah, a combination, a little bit nervous about hitting that 4 hour mark, but excited to get going. Like, I'm one of those people when he makes a decision wants to get going. Like, I don't want to delay it. I don't want to worry about it. I don't want to, have to think too much about it. So I'm sitting in the corral and it's like, just, you know, pull the starter's pistol and let's roll. Like, we're all here. Let's get going. Right.
Yeah.
So a little bit of that nervousness in there, coupled with excitement of it's game day. Let's go.
Definitely. Yeah. Everything's coming to a head now. Well, cool. Well, let's break it down in a couple parts. What was the charted territory for you was the half marathon distance where you were very comfortable. So what was the first 13 miles like for you?
Not a problem. Like, cool. We're on pace. We got this, you know, everything's going to plan. I don't see any issues, right? I feel good. Pacing feels good based on the training that I've put in. I've covered 13 miles before. I'm ready. You know, let's go. Let's go hit 4 miles, 14, 15, 16.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what was it like from there? Like, I guess it's usually what, 10, 10s and the 10K at the end, or half and then you break it up into the other half. But were you breaking it up in your head at all doing that runner's math, or just kind of going through it?
No, I've always had a thought process mantra thinking when it comes to this stuff is race the mile that you're in. Don't get too far ahead of yourself and forget the mile that you just did, right? You can't change that. And so it was always stay stay present, run the mile that you're in. And things were going really well until about mile 17 or 18. And boy, did I cramp up again. Like it got, it was hot, it was humid, which wasn't anything that I wasn't prepared for in a way, right? But the liquid hydration side of the equation could have been much more improved. Like I said, I wasn't carrying handhelds or flasks or anything with me, and trying to drink off the tables just wasn't enough, clearly. And so I cramped severely at mile 18, like really, really bad in both of my calves. And running was very difficult, and even walking got hard at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do you say to yourself in those moments when you know, things aren't going to plan?
So another mantra I have is relentless forward motion. And so it's just take that next step, take that next step, stay in the mile that you're in. Don't worry about getting to mile 19 or mile 20. If you keep moving forward, they will show up. And so it's just a matter of sticking to that mindset. And another mindset that I use today in trail and ultra running is run when you can, walk when you must. And it kind of started at that first marathon. So if my calves had loosened up a little bit, give it a run. But, you know, don't make it a sprint, right?
Sure.
Run steady, hold steady as much as you can. And then if it starts to cramp up again, then walk until it loosens up again. And so I kind of did that back and forth between running and walking, literally until the finish line. But I will tell a funny story. So we got to mile 26, and you have to go up a hill under this overpass and then make a right turn by the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. And at the base of this hill, there was an ambulance with a participant on a stretcher. And I just thought to myself, like, how awful is it to get to this point in the race when you literally just have to go up this hill and make a right turn to get to the finish line, and this athlete is now on the stretcher. And I just thought to myself, it would be cool if the EMTs pushed him up the hill on this stretcher and got him to the finish line and, you know, take care of him at that point. Because it was a male athlete. I was like, he had gotten this far.
Right.
And so I can only imagine how bad he must have felt to have to stop what he's doing at this point in the race. Like, this isn't mile 16. This is literally mile 26.
Right. Gosh, that is brutal, especially going through all the training and like getting, God, yeah, that kills me. So when you saw, I know sometimes when people see, like, for their first marathon, the people on the stretchers, especially when the races are a little bit hot, they see people out on the side in the med tents. Like, did that sway you at all? Or you were just kind of like, gosh, man, I'm going to run my race. Hope that doesn't happen to me, you know?
Yeah. You have to put blinders on.
Yeah.
You know, like horses, when they race at the Kentucky Derby, they have blinders on so they can't see outside of them. You have to do that. Otherwise, your those thoughts that are negative can now permeate into the negative thoughts that you're having and make it even worse for yourself.
Totally. Yeah, that's definitely smart. Cool. And then finish line. So you've had plenty of finish line experiences up until that point, but this was a big one. So what was it like crossing the finish line for your first marathon?
It was amazing. It was euphoric. It was, holy cow, you know, I did something hard again, right? It was something I had put a lot of time and effort into, even money, right? Registrations and travel. And the reward was getting to say that I have completed a marathon. And it was super special to get across that finish line with the crowds that were there and the people cheering you on and the volunteers being super helpful with, you know, now getting you food and drink and the medal. And it was just super special. And I don't, to this day, I don't know that I've not cried at a finish line. So there was that as well.
Yeah.
Cause I just think it's a huge sense of accomplishment. The vast majority of us are not paid athletes. Right. So we're trying to find time within our schedule with responsibilities for work and friends and family and everything else that's going on in our life to put the training in. And to know that all of that training over that, you know, prior 6 months, whatever it was, has now paid off. And the goal that I had set my for myself had been accomplished. So it was absolutely euphoric and emotional at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like it. It's a hard feeling to describe. It's like, it's so personal. It's so internal. Like you can't describe it to somebody that hasn't gone through it. It's an incredible feeling for sure. So from there, obviously you probably had a little bit of recovery. Oh, hopefully took a little bit of time off after that first marathon. But where do we progress from there? I know you've got another marathon under your belt and several Ironmans from there.
Yeah, from that marathon, you know, I started learning more about running and the sport of running, and social media had come into play at that point, Facebook predominantly, and you're seeing all these other things. And the Boston Marathon wasn't a thing for me. I'd never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I start hearing about it and reading about it. And I was like, that sounds interesting. That would be something that I could see myself wanting to chase, right? I had this amazing sense of accomplishment having completed my first marathon. Why not do that? Simultaneously, I had started to get into triathlon, sprint triathlon specifically, and some Olympic distance stuff. But they were all kind of just working together, swimming, cycling, running. And then I got fit enough to think to myself, I should go for a Boston qualifying time. And there was a lot of hoopla around the idea that the Vegas Rock and Roll Marathon was going to be at night, first one on the strip. And I was like, man, that sounds cool. That'll be exciting, yeah. Something to participate in, first ever. And so that became the event that I targeted as being the race I was going to try to qualify for Boston at.
Oh, cool. Okay, sweet. So San Antonio, that one was 2009. When were we planning on doing the Vegas one?
I want to say 2011, 2012. It's a couple years later.
Okay, cool. So at that point, training for Boston, a whole other beast. You got your first marathon under you, kind of have a threshold. But how were you planning for Boston? Were you like seeking out a specific plan, got a coach? Like, what did that look like?
Never hired a coach. Just started following different people on social media. What were they doing? How do you get faster? Had a group of people that were blogging a lot at the time, and some of them were trying to qualify for Boston too. And so we were sharing training tips and ideas, speed work, long runs, hill repeats, you know, just all of that stuff put together by myself. No coach at the time. I think for my age group back then, I think I had to run a 3:15 somewhere in that vicinity, which even to this day, I'm like, that is so blazing fast.
Yes, yeah.
It is so fast. And to think about doing that for 26 miles. But, you know, one of the things that I can say about myself is if I'm training, I'm training, right? If I have a goal, I'm going to put forth the effort to get to it. And so I went through another training cycle and everything felt good. Like the paces I needed to hit felt good. The paces on the long runs felt good. The long, slow long runs were long and slow. Everything felt good, you know, trying to make my way to qualifying for Boston for sure.
Yeah, that's great. Definitely a confidence booster when you're trying to get faster. Just like a little sidebar, because I'm definitely somebody that is looking to get faster. I know we get a lot of questions about how do you actually do that. So like, what were some key things that you found helpful when you were trying to hit a specific time?
The answer I would have given you then and the answer I give to you today would be completely different, in all honesty.
Interesting. Yeah.
There's speed workouts. Absolutely need to do those. And I would say do them at varying distances, right? So 400 meter repeats, 800 meter repeats, mile repeats, half mile repeats, like do the things at different distances so you can get comfortable with what top end speed needs to be for you. I would make sure you're doing strides at the end of those long, slow runs that you need to have to build your endurance. I would also incorporate tempo mileage in the middle of some of your mid-distance runs. And then on, you know, on top of all of that is get to the gym. The fastest runner isn't always born with the genes to be the fastest runner. And oftentimes people will say, well, what does that mean? And I'll say to them, look, if you can run a 9-minute mile for 10 miles, but you haven't built up your strength enough and you go to 12-minute mile for the next 10 miles, right? You're averaging now like a 10 and a half minute pace. Now, if I go to the gym and I get stronger and I can now average a 9-minute mile for 15 miles and I degrade to a 10.5-minute or excuse me, to a 12-minute mile for the next 5 miles, I'm actually faster than you, even though we're quote unquote running the same paces, because I was able to run an additional 5 miles at 9.5 minutes pace while you were running those at 12. And so go to the gym, do the things that you need to do in the gym, lunges, deadlifts, squats, box jumps. Don't skip that stuff. It is super important. It will help you get stronger, which will help you hold on to your speed longer.
Yeah. No, I'm really glad you mentioned the piece about the gym. I think that that's something for speed, obviously, it's hugely important, like you said, but I think that's something that if for your first marathon, even just for injury prevention and making sure that your body is like adapting to the distance that you're putting on it is super important too. I think we kind of convince ourselves for in the beginning that, oh, I'm not a runner, I'm just running a marathon. And so we don't kind of commit to all the bells and whistles, but definitely I think it's important.
100%. You're an athlete. That's one of the things that I tend to correct people on is when they say, oh, I'm just a runner. I'm like, no, you're an athlete. I would encourage you to get on the bike at the gym if they have like a spin bike to easy recovery type stuff for, you know, 30 minutes, let your legs loosen up so you're not going through the pounding of it. And if you can get in the pool and pool walk, that's also going to help you, right? Become a better athlete. And if you become a better athlete, you'll become a better runner.
Definitely. Yeah. Cool. So we were working on this Boston goal. Was it the same amount of time dedicated to training? Like, was it still an 18, 20 week training plan to train for Boston, or did you give yourself a little bit more time?
Nope. 18, 20 weeks is standard for me for most of my training plans. In most cases nowadays, it'll be 16, but yeah, 18 to 20 weeks is standard.
Gotcha. Cool. So I guess fast forward to Vegas, we get there, we get to the start line. How were we feeling for the second one? Similar feeling to how you were feeling for the first, or anything different?
Nope. Let's go. We're here. We're in the corral. I know I need to run somewhere in the vicinity of 3:15. People who are hearing this, just understand that back then you didn't need a buffer of, I think the numbers today are like 5 minutes, right?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, you didn't need that back then, 10, 12 years ago. You know, if you ran under 3:15, 3:14, 50, you were going to get in, kind of thing. And so I was like, 3:15, that's the number. Let's get going. I'm ready to go. Sing the national anthem, pull the gun on the starter's pistol, and let's just start running.
Cool. And this, you said that this was a relatively, I mean, it's Vegas, so I would imagine, but a relatively flat course. I assume you picked this one on purpose for Boston specifically. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. So what was the, I mean, we'll break it down again. I'll let you break it down however you feel like for this one. How did the first, you know, couple of miles feel?
As soon as we left the starter chute, after the first or second mile, I was like, this ain't happening. Like, my body just did. I knew for a fact I was not going to run 3:15. I tried to do as many runs in the evening, speed work in the evening, because again, this race was on the strip at night. So I think we were starting at like 6 o'clock or something. And so like everything is different compared to if you're starting a run at 6 a.m., right? You're trying to rest all day. How do you figure out how to eat all day before this race starts in the evening? And I'm within 2 miles. I was like, this is not happening, but I didn't give up. I knew I had a chance in fitness at setting a PR, and I wasn't going to give up on it. And the original cramping I had at San Antonio, which was, like I said, around mile 17, 18, I didn't cramp up here until about mile 23, 24. And I finished in 3 hours and 31 minutes, somewhere in that vicinity.
Sure.
In tears. But this was not tears of joy. This was tears of pain of putting my body through 3.5 hours of running as hard as I possibly could. And when we were connecting on coming on your show, I told you I've only run 2 marathons. And when I crossed that finish line in Vegas, I was like, I'm never doing this again. Like,
yeah, that was just, it.
I'm not. It was, I went for it. I gave it a shot. I accomplished something that I'm still very proud of today, you know, getting down to 3:31. But I knew, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to qualify for Boston. I'm not going to put myself through the training of trying to qualify for Boston. For me, it just didn't spark any joy to go through that training again, because it's hard. It is really hard training to qualify for Boston, and a lot of the joy of training for a marathon kind of got sucked out of it while trying to chase this extremely difficult goal, which is why those who do qualify, congratulations, because it's not just race day. It's right. All the weeks and all the hard work that you have put in to get to that starting line, which is amazing.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess for you, so like you said, sucked the joy out of it. But for was that joy from just the marathon distance, or did you have kind of, because I know you've ran other, spoiler, you've ran a lot of other races since then. But yeah, was it just the marathon distance you lost the joy for? Did you still have that kind of itch for endurance sports in general?
Endurance sports was going nowhere. I was already getting involved in triathlon at the time. So endurance sports was going nowhere, but the marathon distance itself, and it's probably not fair to the marathon distance, to be honest with you, Taylor. It was this idea of connecting qualifying for Boston to the marathon distance.
Sure.
If I had thought, you know, let's just go run a marathon and not have to put in the uber hard work to get down to a 3:15 qualifying time. So like I said, my first marathon was like around 4 hours. And yeah. So the idea that I trimmed 30 minutes off of that to get down to 3:31 and still was off by 15, 16 minutes, I was like, yeah, I'm not interested in that. I don't know how much harder I can work to get down to that number, or how much harder I want to work, let me say, rephrase. And so, you know, unfair to the marathon distance to connect the two, but I, you know, that was at the time, my mindset was, I'm done with the marathon distance. I'm not doing this again.
Yeah, makes sense. And then, yeah, I guess kind of pivoting to the triathlon world and the Ironman world, cause it sounds like that's where we went next. Did you have a background in biking and swimming, or was that all something that you adopted along the way?
All brand new, right? That's cool. I grew up in New York, and a bicycle was like a BMX or a mongoose, like sure, riding up yeah. and down the street. It was none of the stuff that, you know, I wound up getting involved in. And swimming was splashing around in the pool. It wasn't, you know, structured sets and time for swimming. It was literally splash around in the pool or go to the beach and splash around in the ocean. Like none sure. of those two things were even a thought process for me until I got involved in triathlon.
Cool. So what was that? Like, how did you fall into that world? Was it just something that you naturally, you know, progressed into, or where did that idea come from?
I got tricked, you know, so getting into half marathon and running in general, I always say I was voluntold to get into that stuff. And then getting into triathlon, I say I was tricked because I was playing co-ed softball, slow pitch softball in Texas. And two of my teammates were like, hey, we're going to register for this sprint triathlon. And I was like, what's a triathlon? And they were like, well, you swim and you bike and you run. And I think it was like 300 yards and I don't know, 10 miles on the bike and then a 5K. And I was like, well, I got the running down. I've just run marathons. That's not a big deal. How hard could it be to swim and bike? And so I registered for the event, did the training, right? I was like, yeah, just take the marathon training, half marathon training plan, add in swimming and cycling, and you got it. And I remember asking my teammates, I was like, oh, did you register for this event yet? And they were like, no, we didn't register at all. So now I'm on my own at this event, like not knowing anything. And I love to tell this story because I think it's a great example of don't give up just because things don't go right the first time. So my swimming training consisted of like jumping in the pool at Gold's Gym for like 25, 50 yards and maybe 100 and being like, I could do this. I'm an athlete. And the swim itself at this event was 300 yards. And I swam the first 50 yards and I was so gassed that I started walking. It was in a pool, thankfully. So I got to walk. And I remember thinking they might disqualify me, and that's a good thing because then this whole nightmare is over. But you know, I made it through and got on the bike and on the run, and a whole new love of endurance sports was born because now we're breaking up the sports into different components and swimming and cycling and running. And I go back to this idea of becoming a better athlete. And now that I'm swimming and cycling, I'm becoming a better athlete and not just a runner.
Totally. I mean, I can't help but see the parallels between your first half marathon and your first sprint triathlon. Because it seems like you came out of it like with the same mindset of, okay, I can do that better. I can figure this out.
100%. And, you know, sprint distance triathlon became Olympic distance triathlon. And I was like, I think I could do an Ironman, but let me do a half Ironman first. So I did a half Ironman and I was like, this went well. And I did another two half Ironman events. And I was like, I'm going to do an Ironman. And back then, their Ironman was really popular. And I remember having to be in front of my laptop at the hour that the event opened up. Otherwise, you wouldn't get in. And wow. I registered for Ironman Arizona, which would have taken place in November of 2012. And training for it and thinking to myself, I think I'm ready to do an Ironman now. So I actually registered for Ironman Texas, which took place in late April, early May of 2012. So I even moved up my first Ironman experience from November of 2012 to April, May of 2012, because I just felt confident in my ability to swim, bike, and run the distance and be good at it.
Sure. Yeah, that's incredible. So that's a huge jump too, to go from November to April. Yeah, I guess like I assume it's pretty similar approach as marathon training mentally, but amplified quite a bit. So like, how were you feeling about like fitting all of this into your life? Like how did training get incorporated into you having obviously like a full-time job and things like that?
Yeah. So I hired a coach and was able to work with them on how to fit the training into my life outside of triathlon. And that helped a lot. It was a tremendous help to have somebody else do all the plotting of workouts from swimming, biking, and running. And I literally just had to execute, right? So we used Training Peaks. So I just had to go to Training Peaks on Sunday, look at what my schedule was for the upcoming week, and then put it into my calendar that involved work. I was very fortunate. I worked out of my house at the time. So being able to go in the morning or at lunch was a lot easier than if I had to commute to an office for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. And then, yeah, I guess you said that you were feeling obviously pretty confident. You moved the your first Ironman up quite a bit. So how were you feeling like getting to race day, I know there's a lot more logistics with your first Ironman. Like what was all of that like for the first time?
Yeah, it was a little bit more nervous because of all the logistics. And then you're leaving equipment in the transition areas, right? So you're leaving your bike equipment in the transition area, you're leaving your running equipment in the transition area. And so it's a lot more organization, right? Get a race day checklist, make sure you have all of the items you needed, and then make sure you're putting them in the right bags for the transition. And so there's a little bit of nervousness with that. It's really more about the logistics and the organization of all of that stuff. Getting to the start line of the race, you know, you're standing in amongst 2,000 plus athletes. Back then we had mass starts for the swim. And what that means is all 2,000 people in the water at the same time.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it's a lot of thrashing and arms and everything everywhere. And I remember I did my first one without a wetsuit. And I thought to myself, I'm never doing that again if I have the option to wear one, because it was miserable. The people that were in wetsuits would swim over you, even though they started 10 minutes later. It might have been less, you know, but they're just able to catch up to you so much faster because they're more buoyant with their wetsuit. But that being said, got out of the water, got on the bike, had a blast, and then got to the run, which was my favorite, right? That's where I started. And I was like, I can do this. I've already done a marathon and just enjoyed the run and working at it was just a lot of fun.
Very cool. And finish line for that one. I mean, that's got to be incredible. I know they say your name, like, Jason, you are an Ironman. That, like, I get chills every time I see those videos. So, like, what was that compared to, you know, your first marathon experience crossing that finish line?
A world of difference, because they do announce your name. They have a video board up there, so you see yourself crossing the finish line on the video board, or coming to it anyway. They have an announcer who's yelling your name out. They have the guardrails that are up there that usually have placards on it for their sponsors, and people are slamming it. So it's just raucous. It really is just raucous. And so it's super pumped up. I can find a picture and send it to you of me crossing the finish line of my first Ironman, and you could just see the elation and the excitement from it. It was unbelievable. But here's the thing. At Ironman Texas, you come around a turn. It's like a 180-degree turn. Uh-huh. And you run up this slight little incline, right? So you've been out there. For me, it was just under 12 hours, give or take. And you've been doing this for so long. And you're like, really? You couldn't find a different spot here that
end on a flat. Oh, that's ridiculous. That's when you give a little side eye to the race organization as you go by, for sure. Criminal. But cool. So yeah, it sounds unreal. I always, like I said, see those videos and it's just like, it looks insane. So that's got to really be such an incredible feeling.
It is. And I've got 8 Ironman finishes under my belt and each one of them is different. But the excitement that's at each one of those is there.
Totally.
You could feel the crowd as you get closer and closer to that finish line. And, the announcer, you know, calling your name out. For me, I was fortunate enough to have Mike Riley, who's known as the voice of Iron Man, call my name a number of times. It really is just something that is elevated. That experience is elevated.
Totally. Yeah. Very cool. And I know, obviously, this was an impactful experience for you. Like you said, you've done 7 other Ironman since then. And I know you started your business that was kind of centered around the run, try, bike, the whole trio, I guess you could say. So how did all of that come about? What was the inspiration behind starting the business around this thing?
Yeah, so long story short is in about October 2020, I was working for a company called Travel Host. And during the pandemic, the word travel in your company name is not good. I was fortunate enough that my mentor kept me on. There were 3 of us and we were working in the Mexican Chamber of Commerce. Ironically, we moved out of these amazing offices into what can only be described as a basement in the Mexican Chamber of Commerce. And he got a phone call one day and he handed it to me and he said, I think this is for you. And it was a company trying to sell their running and triathlon magazine business. And we were far apart in the negotiations. I hung up the phone and I looked at him and I said, Bill, I don't need to buy that business. I can start one of my own. And I went to work. It was like I got struck by lightning. And I talked to a number of different people. I mentioned I had a blog back then and talked to a number of people who were also bloggers and just, hey, what could a new publication be? I talked to some freelance writers. And they all said, if you write to, with, and for the beginner athlete that you've got something new on your hands that nobody else is doing. And I thought that's cool, but what about if we focused on women, people of color, the queer community, physically challenged, disabled athletes, and told those stories? Because as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, community is a big thing for me. Sitting around the coffee table after you've done a hard swim, bike, and run, and chatting and telling stories and laughing with each other and learning from each other, like that is huge for me. And I thought if I can start a business that essentially is your virtual run club where we're all telling stories about the things that we've experienced in endurance sports, then this is what I want to do. And so January of 2021, we launched the business and we've started our 5th year here in 2025. And I think we have somewhere near 400 stories that have been told on our platform from the written word in our magazine and on our website to July of 2024. We launched the Everyday Athlete Podcast Network, where we are interviewing everyday athletes, people who are doing what we are talking about, going after their first marathon, first Ironman, first 5K, and providing people with some inspiration and motivation. One of the things that I'm most proud of is being Puerto Rican. And Puerto Ricans aren't typically participating in these sports. So much so that when I told my family I was going to do these sports and I was going to start this business, they said, we don't do this stuff. And I was like, who's this we stuff? Like, I'm doing it and I'm starting the business. And so if there's a kid who's Puerto Rican and he loves to run and he loves to swim and he loves to bike, but he doesn't see anybody around him doing that stuff, now here I am doing it. And so we share those stories and we get open and honest and vulnerable because that's what you do at run clubs or triathlon clubs, right? You're open and honest and vulnerable with each other because we've seen each other at our rawest moments, right? We've seen each other cramp on the course. We've seen each other crying because things hurt so bad. We've seen each other cry because we didn't reach our goal. And we provide that as a platform for people to connect. And our everyday athlete community is second to none with what we have built over the last four, going on now our fifth year.
Man, that's incredible. I love the foundation of the whole thing. And I love like how it was centered around these communities that aren't typically represented in this sport. I'm sure that that's just made such an incredible impact over these last 5 years. What's like some advice that maybe you've learned from some of these athletes that you've interviewed over the years? Like what's something that you can offer from all of these experiences to this audience that might be looking to like train for their first marathon or get into an endurance sport in general?
That's a great question. And it's almost exactly what we ask when we interview them for a feature called How It All Started. What's some advice? And so if I was to boil down those 300 to 400 stories from an advice perspective, the one that most people give, and I wholeheartedly agree with this, is just do it. If you want to run a marathon, just do it. If you want to run a 5K, just do it. Don't put restrictions on yourself, right? The world is lined up to restrict you from doing whatever it is you think you want to do already. You don't need to do that yourself. You need to tell yourself, I can do this. I can be successful at this. And don't get caught up in the comparison game, right? So I've been doing this stuff for 17 years. Don't compare yourself, who's getting ready to participate in their first 5K, to me, who's run 250 miles in an event. Like, I didn't do that when I started 18 years ago. I started at the 5K, grew into the half marathon, right? Grew into the marathon and made my way through various distances and through different sports. So my advice would be, get started and do it, and don't compare yourself to what other people are doing.
Love it. Yeah, I think that's so important. And we talked about it a little bit, but especially in this social media age where it's so much easier to compare yourself to other people. Like, the more you can dive into your own community, dive into the people that are real in your life that you can take advice from, that you can, you know, trust and build a community around, versus the millions of opinions that you can find online, I think is huge.
Yeah, like, I mean, and that's exactly the premise for our company, because you see it today. Go on social media and somebody posts that they ran, I don't know, pick a number, a 45-minute 5K. And somebody's like, are you even a runner? And it's like, yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah, both of my feet were off the ground at one time. Yes, I'm a runner.
Right.
Or somebody's finishing an Ironman in 16:59:59 because they cut off at 17 hours. Like, are you even an Ironman? It's like, yes. I swam, bike, and ran for 140.6 miles. The answer is yes, I am an Ironman, right? Like, there are so many, there's so many people that gatekeep in these sports. Oh, if you don't run a 6-minute mile, you're not a runner. Oh, if you don't run a 2-hour marathon, you're not a runner. Oh, if you don't do a 8-hour Ironman, you're not an Ironman. Oh, if you haven't run a 100-miler, you're not an ultra runner. It's like, nah, I don't buy that for a minute. If I run 26.3 miles, I'm an ultra runner, based on the definition of it being longer than a marathon. And here's the other thing. If you want to run 5Ks and they make you happy, do it. You don't have to run a half marathon or a marathon or participate in any other event. Run the 5Ks. Enjoy them. Enjoy the community that's with you at those 5K races. Don't worry about the other stuff.
Love it. Yeah, so important. Super important. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us and offering some advice. This was really cool. I do like to kind of wrap up the show with a couple more fun questions, just some stuff that I ask every person that comes on about fuel and shoes and that kind of thing. I always give the disclaimer that this fuel, shoes, it's your own journey. Try out everything and anything. It's definitely a little bit of trial and error in the beginning, but you'll find what works for you. But for you, what's worked for you for fuel over the years?
Just about everything. I'll just tell you what I use today. That might make it easier.
Cool.
Disclaimer, 7 Summit Snacks is a advertising partner of Run Tri Bike, but I do use their chocolate fuel energy. It literally is a chocolate bar, but it is designed for endurance athletes. So I use that in conjunction with Scratch hydration as well as Cliff Shots, the little chews in there. Yeah. So from a nutrition hydration standpoint, that's the stuff that I use predominantly. But I will experiment. I will use Tailwind in some instances. I will use other products to test out flavors, because one of the things that I have noticed, especially running 50 miles, 100 miles, 250 miles, is the idea of eating the same thing over and over again. You kind of get tired of it, right?
Totally.
And so by trying different things while you're at it, I think is super important.
For sure. Cool. And then shoes. What have you liked for shoes over time?
Again, I've run in a lot of different brands. Currently, and again, disclaimer, Topo Athletic is a advertising sponsor of Run Tri Bike, but I am currently running in the Topo Spectre 2, as well as the Topo Terra Venture 4, which is their trail shoe. I do have a pair of Salomon Sensorides that I run in, as well as, I just forgot what the other, it's a Merrell, but I don't know the name of the actual model, but Merrell trail shoes I run in as well. And I will find other shoes to test out and give a whirl on, depending on what the terrain is that I'm going to be running, and just trying to experiment to find the right shoe. But for the most part right now, I'm running in the Topo Athletic Spectre 2 and the Topo Athletic Venture 4.
Cool. Love it. And then last question for you is just what's coming up next for you? Is there anything that you're currently training for, working on in your personal life that's coming up pretty soon?
Yeah, so we as a company will be racing at the Javelina 100 in October.
So cool.
Yeah, so we'll have a company tent there. So for all you listeners who are going to be out in that Phoenix area in October, come hang out with us. We're going to be there literally all day. So come hang out with us. And then we'll pick up a couple of races in between as some training races, which haven't been fully plotted out yet, but somewhere in April, May, and then probably again in late July, early August as lead up to racing at Javelina.
Sweet. Lots coming up this year. That's very exciting. If anyone wants to follow along with you, where can they find you?
We are at Run Tri Mag. So RUNTRIMAG. And that is on every social media platform. And that's our website, runtrimag.com. You can find us there no matter where it is. Threads, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Blue Sky, you name it. We're there. We have it there. And what you'll see come across is stories of everyday athletes doing the things that were once thought impossible by those athletes.
Very cool. Well, it's I think having people like you that are facilitators of these communities are so important to have in the running and the endurance space. So thank you for all that you do. And thank you again for coming on the show. This is great.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @MyFirstMarathonPod. See you on the next one.